pilots were supposed to be barely restrained mad dogs. Perhaps Imperial evaluations of rebel pilots were simply wrong. Not even accidentally wrong, just distorted to provide the Imperial pilots with more and better motivation to fight fiercely. She shook her head. That had been a treasonous thought, dangerous to a woman who would be once again working for Imperial forces in the near future. She tried to banish it as she climbed the ladder to her snubfighter's cockpit. Amon Raimonda mechanic was up there on the fuselage, making sure the R2 unit tucked in behind the cockpit was securely attached. "You've got a beauty here," the man said. She stepped up into the cockpit and settled into her pilot's couch. Brand new from the factory. It was true. Colonel Repnus could requisition new gear whenever a shipment was delivered to his training squadron, and apparently did. Her R2 unit, nicknamed Tonin, was brand new and unscathed. Warlord Zinj's quartermaster would doubtless feel a little flicker of gratitude when she handed it over to him. Best of luck, pilot.
Thanks.
Moments later, she was in space. Wedge pulled beside and slightly ahead of her, and the Wraith's blonde cold slicer, Castan Don, wasn't it, took up position on the other side of the commander. As the ninth pilot of a unit that normally flew by paired wingmen, Lara had been assigned as the temporary third member of an existing pair. She was sure she'd drawn the commander because of her lack of experience. But it wasn't for her to question orders, just obey and hope for the best. They'd timed their arrival so that the face of Lavisar, featuring its capital city, Psyward, would be dead ahead when they emerged from hyperspace.
Great placement, 12.
Wedge's voice.
All right. We should have a 5 to 10 minute window before they can bring online any secondary sensor arrays worth worrying about. Remember, you'll be aiming for a complex 3 times as long as wide, featuring sky blue buildings.
Lara smiled. If the planetary defenders recorded enough of these transmissions and could crack them, the Wraith's pre-scripted dialogue would sound perfectly normal for a botched mission in progress. Tonin, scan normal Imperial as well as Wraith frequencies, she said. Send anything you hear that sounds like pilot traffic to my helmet comlink. The display unit set aside for communication with the astromech popped up with a quick reply. Understood. And almost immediately she began to hear faint, fuzzy transmission, garbled words.
Scorpion approach sector. Leader, 8, visual sensors show the sensor complex intact. It looks like our ground team fouled up.
Even distorted by New Republic comm equipment, Wedge's voice was hard.
They're going to be sorry they got back to us. They'll wish they only had Lavisar authorities to deal with. Wraith, come about information. 12, confirm, and then transmit our escape vector.
12, understood, sir.
The Wraiths began a slow sweep, bringing them around toward deep space again, taking them back out the way they had come.
Control indicates enemy force is fleeing. Stay in formation. We are chasing them all the way. Like panthers to the hunters. Stay tight.
Lara frowned. That last transmission had not sounded right. Tonin, can you plot the origins of the Imperial transmissions you've received so far? The display responded, approximately. Put them up on my sensor board. She activated her comm system. Leader, this is 13. I'm picking up indications that we have company ahead. Probably the garrison of a lunar station.
Understood, 13. Good work. 12, give us a new escape course.
Wedge rolled out to starboard, now the shortest course away from the planet and new enemies. New activity on the sensor port. A single red blip distancing itself from the primary moon, heading toward the Wraiths on an intercept course. As Lara watched, the blip became 2. One ahead, one lagging behind. She adjusted the display to zoom in on the image and saw that the forward blip was registering as a full squad of TIE fighters moving at maximum speed, while the rear blip was 4 units unknown type, with a 75% possibility that they were Lambda-class shuttles.
Wraiths, this is Leader. My astromech calculates that the lunar unit will be on us before we clear the gravity well of that second moon. Mission Order 1 is rescinded. Engage and eliminate the lunar force with all dispatch. Then form up and get back to our escape course.
Lara put all shield power to her bow shields for the head-to-head approach. Wedge and Kasten had to have done the same by now. That was an interesting thought. Wedge and Tilly flying mere meters ahead of her with no power to his stern shields. She could eliminate him with a twitch of the finger. It should have been tempting. Yet somehow, it wasn't. Such an attack would be treacherous, she thought. She laughed. Listen to yourself. There's no such thing as treachery, only efficiency. That was one of the basic tenets of Imperial intelligence, and she had lived by those words. But at a certain point, she had decided that Admiral Apwar Trigget was treacherous, and she had engineered his destruction because of that decision. She had taken revenge on him for a concept as simple and as out of place for an intelligence officer as personal honor. Tonin beeped a warning. The range meter dropped to 2 kilometers, the distance at which New Republic targeting systems could begin to place shots in an almost accurate fashion. The numbers continued to drop. And Wedge and Castle both fired their red laser blast, quad-linked beams of pure destruction lashing out toward Lavisar's defenders. Lara's breath became ragged as something, a fog that thoughts couldn't quite penetrate, closed down over her brain. Defend your wingman. Can't kill Imperial pilots. The price on Wedge Antilles' head means years of security. Zinj is the same as Trigget. She brought up her targeting computer. Immediately, the system's yellow bracket settled in a jittery fashion around one of the oncoming TIE fighters and turned green, indicating a lock. Reflexively, she fired. And saw one of the beams strike home, charring a hole in the starfighter's port solar array wing. Behind. The enemy would be coming up behind. She checked the sensors again. Yes. 2 TIE fighters were coming around fast, trying to take up position behind her. She could try to cut hard to starboard and might be in position for another head-to-head by the time they got their guns fixed on her. No. Her job was to follow her wingman. Protect him. Wedge cut hard to starboard. She followed, her turn not quite as precise. Wedge finished his maneuver, firing already at the 2 oncoming TIE fighters. Lara tried to place her targeting brackets on one of the 2, couldn't manage it. She fired anyway. Her spray of single-shot lasers slicing through vacuum near the TIE fighter's starboard wing. The TIE pilot jerked away from the bombardment of red fire, drifted to port, straight into Wedge Antilles' quad-link blast. The TIE fighter disappeared in a glorious explosion, and Lara heard clanks and pings as her X-Wing sliced through the cloud. She tried to find the other TIE fighter on her sensors, but the closest enemy was outbound, headed toward the cloud of red blips representing the 2 full squadrons from Lavisar's surface. In fact, all the remaining TIE fighters, 5 of them, were outbound.
The race! Leader! Form up! 12, make your calculations and get us out of here. I make it less than a minute before they overtake us. Give me status, reports by number. Leader, 2, undamaged.
It was there, battering at her head, a thought that wouldn't let her go. Zinj is the same as Trigget. Why had she thought that? Because it was true. Raptor forces had not risen against the Wraiths. Had this been a Zinj-controlled planet, Raptors would have been the first forces up. They had to maintain their reputation for brutality and efficiency. So this world was independent, and the intercepted Raptor transmission a false lead, as the Wraiths had said. And since the forces of Lavisar weren't set up for the Wraiths, else there would have been a lot more of them, this was just what Commander Antilles had said. A plan by Zinj to have New Republic rebel forces hurt the planet's defenses, maybe knock them down, so Zinj could move in, either as a conqueror or a defending hero. Those 2 choices were the same. Zinj in control. She wanted to admire the plan. It was clever, efficient. But those pilots who'd just been sacrificed, who'd died to satisfy Zinge's sense of efficiency, it was like Admiral Trigger. And it wasn't honorable. And the last 15 years of Gera Pettifell's life closed in around Lara Nutzel like a coffin. Her parents work for Imperial Intelligence. Their arrest and execution for unspecified treason. How Gera had hated them. Missed them. How she'd learned so eagerly and demonstrated such loyalty so that nothing like that would ever happen to her.
13.
All her life, she'd known not to believe the rebels and their simplistically optimistic propaganda. Now she could no longer put her faith in the forces that had taken her, trained her, shaped her. There was nothing for her. Tonin's irritable beeping finally caught her attention. Leader wants to know if you're hurt. She keyed her comlink. Sorry, Leader. 13, reporting. They returned to Mon Raymonde's fort hangar, much as they'd left it, a little more battered, but otherwise unhurt. Lara climbed out into a chaotic sea of backslaps and embraces, handshakes and congratulations. Everyone seemed to move in slow motion. Words were slowed, almost incomprehensible, and sounds were muted. Yet the one thing Lara understood was the expressions turned on her. They were the eyes of a group to whom she belonged. Not since her parents' loss had she seen that expression. And the wraiths and rogues weren't saying it, weren't deliberately expressing the thought, you are one of us. No, it was implicit, a backdrop to whatever else they were saying. Good job noticing that backup squad. Nice shot, how'd you manage it with your lasers on single fire? Your first kill, Silhouette, congratulations and condolences. One of us. Maybe she could do it. Maybe she could just be Lara Nutzel forever. With Lieutenant Gera Pettifell, that poor, unhappy creature, truly among the dead of the Star Destroyer Implacable. One of us. When the Wraiths returned to Hawkbat Station with their new member in tow, they found that the other members of the squadron had not been idle. On his own initiative, Kel Tanner had plotted and led two missions, all because of Runt.
We determined that they, the people of Halmad, had made a mistake,
the long-faced alien said, pride in his voice.
After our attacks and thefts of the interceptors, they installed a new set of sensor stations. But when we examined the specifications of those new sensors, we discovered that their effective range was a couple of hundred kilometers short of the area they were supposed to cover. Meaning that we now possessed a narrow corridor of airspace we could drop into without any real likelihood of detection. After that, we were able to stage raids on ground emplacements.
Kel, tell them what I did, Kasten said.
Oh, that's right. Kasten managed to forge us a high-level account on their global information service. We are now being bounced visual and censored data from their planetary defense satellite network. It's not being beamed straight at us, don't worry. We've set up a relay near one of the existing satellite belt mining colonies. Anyway, we've picked up signs that they're constructing a couple of small starfighter bases, possibly as a counter against our ground missions.
Kel smiled, his expression reflecting a simple pride in the Wraith's accomplishments while most of the officers were gone. Kasten has also modified the comm systems in all our ties, so they distort our voices more effectively. The new computer-controlled distortion actually modifies accents and changes genders, making it even harder for listeners to identify our voices. Runt said,
Yes, we have also identified the regular schedule and course of a refueling tanker that leaves Halmad, takes a tour of government mining operations in the asteroid belt, and returns to the city of Hollis. It is now escorted by a couple of TIE fighters, but we think that with the proper surprise, we could take them before a distress signal is sent. If we capture the tanker, but fly it along its regular course, that gives us an opportunity to drop our entire squadron, and perhaps Sungrass as well, down on Hollis. This type of action would surely attract Zinji's attention.
Well, that's good work, Wedge said. Now you've added quite a lot to the sting the government of Halmat has to be feeling. And we've demonstrated that we can enter their airspace and leave at will, no casualties, no apparent effort that they can discern. They don't know how to cope with a unit like the Wraith's. With any luck, that'll put them in the camp of Zinj and his protection.
Wedge smiled. Let's keep the pressure up on them. I want those two starfighter bases eliminated. A clear message to the Imperial forces on Halmad that anything they can construct, the Hawkbats can knock down. And I think to demonstrate our superiority and their helplessness, we ought to stage those two eliminations simultaneously. So, let's settle in and do some planning.
Tyria entered the bunk room module she now shared with Lara and waved the data card she held.
Mail from home?
Lara took the card, curious, and slid it into the appropriate slot on her terminal. She entered her password and brought up the mail message. A man's face, good-looking and somewhat roguish, appeared. Behind him was a table with some hollows on it, and an open window showing a landscape of blasted black ground.
Hello, Lara,
the man said.
I don't imagine you ever thought you'd hear from me again.
Lara frowned. Who was this man? Then she recognized a face she'd only seen a couple of times in files she'd hastily memorized some time ago, and felt her jaw drop.
It's Tavin, not so, my brother. I thought he was supposed to be...
I know you must have thought I was dead,
the recording continued.
Just as I thought you were. It seems that fate has spared us both. I'd made some unusual arrangements with the town constable and was earning an honest living on the Sea of Aldiv under an assumed name when New Old Town was hit. I came home and everything I knew was gone. But now I find out that you've survived. I can't tell you how happy I am.
Lara felt Tyria squeeze her and heard her whisper, "Congratulations." But Lara's mind was racing down pathways far from human contact. She'd have to reply to this boob, somehow break off all family contact forever, and without letting him see a hollow of her, of Gera Petisil. Then her attention fell on the hollows on the table behind Tavin. They showed family scenes. The real Lara Nuxel's mother and father sharing a swing tied to a tree behind their farmhouse. A much younger Tavin Nuxel swimming in the family pond. And, seated atop a repulsor thresher, her expression cheerful, Lara Nuxel. Not the real Lara Nuxel. Her, Gera Petisil. In farm clothes with fine blonde hair, wearing a sunburn she'd never suffered in life. The world spun and Lara's knees went weak. She'd never been on the world of Aldivi. She'd never been seated on that thresher. Her brother was now looking at a datapad.
Listen, do you remember putting in for a transfer to move to Greenton and transmitting an application to Lachini Foods there? I have your original letter here. If I can effect this transfer, would you be interested in employing a technician with my skills and special knowledge? Well, Lachini Foods wrote back. They're offering you the job you wanted.
Tavin's eyes flickered to something off screen, then back.
Hey, looks like I'm almost out of time if I'm going to keep this message affordable. Whether you want this job or not, let me hear from you. Goodbye for now.
He half smiled, and the picture froze. Lara just sat and tried to breathe, tried to sort out what was happening to her. Then it came to her. Those had been her words, but she'd written them on Coruscant in a letter to Warlord Zinj. Obviously, this was an indirect message from Zinj. Tavin Nuxel was in on it. That made sense. He was supposed to be a crook, a confidence man. She felt wobbly again. That meant Zinj had penetrated her Lara Nuxel identity. It was no longer a haven for her. What was she going to do? Just days ago, she had abandoned her plan, her desire to serve Zinj. She had decided to stay here, to belong here. And now Zinj had denied her the future she'd stumbled upon. She rose, and turned an uncertain smile on Tyria. I think I need to walk for a while. Outside her habitation module, she turned right, heading deeper into the mineshaft that served the wraiths as home. One block from her module, a block being one uninterrupted series of cargo modules, Lara ran into Kel Tanner. The big lieutenant was working out against a combat dummy. Is this how you get rid of tension? She asked.
That's right.
What do you do when you just want to scream? He pointed farther down the shaft. Two blocks down, there's a powered door to the left. It leads to a cross tunnel. He was right. Once the door to that cross tunnel shut behind her, she could feel that she was cut off from all contact with people. She screamed. An expulsion of anger and confusion that stripped her throat raw. Then she put her back against the rough stone wall and slid down to sit, her face in her hands. Her little vacation was over. It was time to think analytically again. Zinj was about to consume the future that she just decided she wanted. What could she do about that? Possible solution? Return to original plan and join Zinj. She shook her head over that. At Lavisar, she'd decided once and forever that Zinj was unworthy. He was dishonorable. She would never join him. Possible solution? Confess all to her commanding officer. No. That would solve only some of her problems. Wedge Antilles might accept her aid in the continued campaign against Zinj, but he would never trust her again. No one would. That trust, she'd found, was more addictive than spice was supposed to be. She could not live without experiencing it again, and wondered how she'd lived so long without it. Possible solution. Put Zinj off, delay him. Perhaps feed him false information, and ride out this campaign against him. Once he was destroyed, he could no longer expose her. That was possible. She decided on that approach for the time being. She belatedly realized she was looking at a pair of booted feet. She looked up into the face of Min Donos. Are you all right? I heard you had some happy news, but you don't look happy. He shrugged. It's not my business, but if you want to talk... She did. It was wrong, she knew, but she had to talk. I heard from my brother. He was supposed to have been killed when my town was destroyed by Implacable, but he survived. Dono sat against the wall opposite from Lara. And that's not good news? Not really. I really don't care for my brother, she said. He was a criminal. He should have been in jail when New Old Town was destroyed, but he'd managed to sneak off under an assumed name. That's the sort of man he is. So, I suppose I'm glad he's alive, but he wants to drag me back into his habits of deceit, into his confidence games. He has no other reason to get in contact with me. He wants something. Donos rubbed his chin while he mulled that over. Finally, he said, could Zinj have gotten hold of him? What? No, bear with me. We know that Zinj has a considerable level of interest in Commander Antilles and Wraith Squadron. Let's say he finds your name on the unit roster and checks into your background, then finds this scofflaw of a brother of yours alive when the man should be dead. Would your brother turn you over to a man like Zinj for credits? Lara's mind whirled. Try as hard as she might to keep her fictitious background separate from her current life, they continued to threaten collision. In a Coruscant second, she said. So maybe this is just him wanting to graft some credits from you. And maybe he's angling to lead you into a Zinj trap. Possible? Possible, she admitted. I think we need to find out. I mean, that's intruding into your family business. But if Zinj is taking a run at you through your family, he might do the same with the rest of us. We need to know. You're right. But I have to do this myself. He wouldn't trust anyone but me. Not all by yourself, no. What if it's a trap? If you like, I'll put together a mission proposal and run it past Commander Antilles. Just you and a small team going to Aldivy to clear this up. Would you? I'd appreciate that. The way her head was filling up with whirling emotions, She wasn't sure she could think clearly enough to plan a shopping trip. He smiled. Try getting some rest. He gave her a little wave goodbye and left her alone with her thoughts. She should never have agreed for him to plan and propose this Alderby mission. She had to be in charge of it, every part of it, or something would come up to ruin her, expose her. But she was oddly unworried. It was because she trusted Mindanus. Trusted someone. She shook her head. That was wrong. She couldn't trust. It went against all mission parameters. But she did. And she found herself crying, without entirely understanding why. Wedge began his power-up and systems check. Kel, Runt, Donos, Tyria, Piggy, and Kasten were already off in the Nara. Their mission was to conclude at about the same time as that of the other Hawkbats, but required more time in its initial stages.
Hawkbat leader to squadron, give me your status.
Face's voice was now low, growling. Face, playing the role of Hawkbat Independent Space Force founder General Kurgan, had to be in charge of the mission. Their broadcasts were certain to be intercepted, and it would not do for Wedge, Hawkbat 1, to be heard issuing orders to Face, Hawkbat leader.
Hawkbat 10, all ready.
And Shala's voice was distinctly that of a male. Wedge cleared his throat. Hawkbat 1, ready to launch. Laughter erupted from his comm set, several voices were. He said, is there a problem? Face's growl answered,
no problem, One. We're receiving you at full power.
But Wedge could hear poorly restrained laughter in his voice. As the count continued, Wedge switched his comm unit over to a private frequency, one he shared with his X-Wing and his astromech. Gate, are you receiving? His R5 unit responded with a cheerful mechanical tweet. On my first mark, record my transmission. On my second mark, cease recording and transmit what you recorded back to me. Mark. We, the Rebel Alliance, do therefore, in the name and by the authority of the three beings of the galaxy, solemnly publish and declare our intention. Mark. His words came back to him a moment later, but they were not in his voice. They were a fuzzy, high-pitched jabber, exactly what an Ewok would sound like if trained to speak basic. He sighed and banged his helmeted head on his pilot's yoke. At least morale was high. Escort duty was tedious, but at least it drew extra pay. That's how Lieutenant Milzen Vane, native of the city of Hullis and starfighter pilot, looked at it. Today, he and his wingmen were guarding the tanker Bastion. Vane's comm system hummed.
Hey, Lieutenant. Bad news. We have a fuel pump failure. They're repairing it, but it's going to be a couple of hours at least.
Wonderful.
Listen, we can power sensors back up, and you and your wingmate can come in for some calf. There's a fresh pot brewing.
Oh, shouldn't. But the thought of spending some of those extra hours in a heated mess with fresh calf instead of drifting in zero gravity was an appealing one.
Well, what if I said that the captain wanted to consult with you on matters pertaining to the future protection of the Bastion?
Sounds serious. We'll be right there. Two minutes later, in the colony's main hangar, Vane and his wingmen clambered out of their cockpits and turned to face into the muzzles of blasters. Two figures wearing TIE pilot gear, but colored gray instead of traditional Imperial black, held blaster sidearms on them. Vane and his partner raised their hands. The man with the rifle said,
there's bad news and good news. The bad news is that we're the Hawkbats, and we're going to take your starfighters and blow up some ground facilities with them. But the good news is that we really do have fresh calf for you in the mess.
He gestured with a flick of the rifle tip toward the main exit.
Let's go.
When the rifleman and his captives had gone, Tyria activated her comlink.
Five, how's the wiring going?
Bastion's ready to blow. She's going to make a big mess.
bats in tight formation dropped toward Halmad in the narrow corridor they knew to be unprotected by the planet's sensor arrays. Their own sensors told them that Bastion was making its approach to the planet via a government-approved course, but they would not be communicating with Bastion, could not get updates on the other team's progress. Within minutes, they were cruising at just above sea level and on a course for the port city of Felon, or more accurately, for a small, hidden Imperial base just south of the city.
"Entering atmosphere on final approach for Hollis,"
Red said. He occupied Bastion's pilot seat. Kel, seated in Bastion's command chair, turned to Runt. "Have you got the new navigational program in place?"
"We do."
Kel patted Runt on the back and rose. "Run the nav program, then we run."
"Initiating."
Tyria and Piggy in the TIE fighter escorts needed no further orders. Their task was simple. Pace Bastion as the ancient tanker dropped toward Hollis, then diverted east toward the second fighter base the military forces of Halmad were building. Protect the tanker from the starfighters that would inevitably rise against it, at least long enough for Bastion to get within a couple of kilometers of the base, and then be far, far away when Kel activated his comm unit and detonated Bastion and all the fuel remaining within her. Then the sensor board lit up like a fireworks display. Kel and Runt stared, disbelieving, at the flurry of activity it showed in the west, the enormous signal from the east. Kel activated Bastion's comm unit. 5-1. We have a problem. Do you read? Forest, with occasional rivers and lakes, had replaced waves beneath the hull pattern. The range meter put them seconds from their target. Then Space and Fainan were firing just as the Imperial base came into Wedge's view.
"Good shooting, Hawkbat."
That was the gravelly voice of Space's persona.
"Leader, this is 4. We hit shields, then came up as we opened fire. The platform has sustained no damage."
Then TIE fighters and interceptors came up out of the trees. Wedge checked the sensor board. 36 unfriendlies, 3 full squadrons. Shala spoke next, her voice subdued even in its distorted form.
"We are so dead."
Bastion shuddered. Runt looked over the diagnostics board.
"Are we hit?"
"No, we're tractored by that." Kel tapped the sensor board and the huge shape on it. Donus' voice came over the intercom from the Nara, which was docked with Bastion.
"What's happening?"
Kel replied, "They've got us. Our mission is scrubbed, and so are we if we can't figure out a way to get clear of them." Kel's next transmission was to their X-Wing escorts, Tyria and Piggy. "Abort mission. Repeat, abort mission. Over." Tyria replied,
"Negative. Standing by for your departure. Over."
"Do not stand by. This is a direct order. Abort mission. Acknowledge. Over." Tyria's voice came back.
"Acknowledged. Aborting. Over."
Donus' voice came over the intercom again.
"What's the plan, 5?
"Runt joins you in the shuttle. When we're as close as we're going to get to that capital ship without being trapped inside, you launch and get a few seconds of acceleration before another tractor beam grabs you. In that time, I set off our explosive charges." Donus' voice came back.
"You need to be with us aboard the Nara to do that."
"Can't do it, 9. The transmitter I have and the one in the shuttle won't be able to cut through their jamming."
"Wait a second. I think Kasten and I can work out something."
Donos paused a moment.
"Yes. I can set off the explosives at a distance."
"How?"
"Because I'm special and you're not. Now, I need you to set Bastion's comm system to pick up tight beam transmissions across the electromagnetic spectrum."
Kel felt the heaviness leave him as he grasped what Donos was planning. "I read you. We'll be right there."
"Break by group."
Face's voice sounded strained even under distortion.
"Fire at will, and make..."
There was the slightest pause. Wedge knew that Face had been about to say, "May the Force be with you," that giveaway, but face recovered so quickly, Wedge doubted anyone not familiar with him would have recognized his slight lapse.
We drink from the skulls of our enemies tonight.
Wedge, Shara, and Lara roared toward Face and Phantom. All five Hawkbats opened fire at the fighters and interceptors pursuing each wing.
That little head-to-head view pulled 100% effective. Six up, six down.
Wedge glanced at his sensor screen. A moment ago, the screen had showed 36 enemies, 7 friendlies. Now it showed 25 enemies, 7 friendlies. Wedge whistled.
Leader, 3, I just flipped my sensors over to long range. I show a capital ship clearing the horizon and heading this way.
A cruiser?
A Star Destroyer, at least.
It was a super Star Destroyer, by name Iron Fist. As Kel and Runt clattered up Nara's boarding ramp and came forward into the cockpit, its image, enhanced by the shuttle's visual sensors, dominated the forward view screen. Kasten and Donas sat in the second row of seats, bent over a long weapon, Donas' laser sniper rifle.
"We did not know you had brought that,"
Runt said. Donas snorted. "I take it to parties, dining engagements, and the refresher. It was in the smuggling compartment. Kel, you have the detonation code? Give it to Kasten." Their shuttle was docked with Bastion, its viewports oriented so its occupants had a view mostly of sky, with only a little of the tanker intruding. And now that sky was full of TIE fighters. Wedge rolled around to begin an approach against Face and Phantom's tails, but almost immediately he saw one of the pursuing TIE fighters' shots strike home, hitting the engines of one of the friendly TIEs. That starfighter rolled in a random fashion, briefly regained controlled flight, then dropped below the line of trees and was lost to sight. On the sensor port, Hawkbat 7 hung thin and signal faded to blackness. Wedge felt ice slash through his gut as the most likely scenario went through his mind. The Hawkbat would circle around the fallen pilot, trying to determine whether Phanon was dead or alive, and would protect him from the strafing runs of the enemy TIEs until they too fell. One by one. He keyed his comlink.
Hawkbats, this is one. Recommend abort mission.
He steeled himself against a protest from Face, and Face's voice came across immediately, but not with the words he expected.
Hawkbats, leader, confirm.
But then Face's interceptor dropped below the tree line, pursued by fast-moving TIE fighters. TIE fighters preceded Bastion into the Superstar Destroyer's main landing bay. In a moment, the tanker would begin its ascent into the hands of Zings. Remember, Kel said into his comlink, we'll have a handful of seconds from the time we launch to the time they get another tractor on us. 9, that's all the time you have. Donas was now in the emergency airlock, his pilot suit on and sealed against space, to give him a bare few moments of protection from the hard vacuum he would be experiencing. He simply said, ready. Runt hit the control to release the Nara from its dock with Bastion. He cut in the shuttle's thrusters at full power, blasting away from the tanker. He immediately put Nara into a climb toward the surface of Palmut, then continued the loop so that the charred, antiquated black surface of Bastion and the surrounding gleam of the Superstar Destroyer Iron Fist came within sight. There was a little flicker of light between Nara and Bastion. Nothing happened. Kel felt his stomach sink. It was too difficult a shot. Donas, as good as he was trying to fire a laser beam modified to carry data instead of a lethal intensity of power, and trying to hit Bastion's communications array from a moving shuttle. Nara shuddered with the characteristic trembling of a small craft in the grip of a tractor beam. Kel shook his head. Donas fired again. A bright orange glow appeared in the viewports and hatch scenes of Bastion. Then the tanker vanished, replaced by a globe of yellow and orange destructive force, an expanding cloud that swelled up into the main landing bay, out across the lower surface of Iron Fist, and out toward Nara. Face dropped into the trees. Then suddenly the trees were gone and there was water below him. He'd emerged over a lake. no cover, but it gave him an opportunity. Sensors showed that the rest of the Hawk Bats were spacebound, most of the TIE force pursuing them. He had a window. He could make a break for space. No, he couldn't. Not with Thanan still out there. He might not be dead. Space dropped as swiftly as he dared into the water near shore. The lake water rose to the height of the top of his front viewport. He powered down, then manually cranked his access hatch open and clambered halfway out. A huge leaf pad was within reach, and he dragged it across the top of his interceptor. The expanding cloud of fiery gas enveloped Nara and shook her harder than the tractor beam ever had. Runt let out an exultant whoop.
We are free!
Punch it! Get us out of here, Kell said. They shot out of the explosive cloud like a proton torpedo leaving an X-wing. Behind them, visual sensors showed Iron Fist's keel enveloped in black and orange glowing debris. Kell kept his eye on that image even as it got smaller. Come on. Come on. Give us a present. Break up! But the 8-kilometer-long capital ship stayed sturdily in one piece.
No tractors, no pursuit, Runt said.
Let's hope it stays that way. Kasten, plot us an escape vector and hyperspace jump any direction. They were a gloomy group gathered in the conference module at Hawkbat Base. Wedge said, We're all concerned about Fae, son Thanan. There is the possibility that they didn't make it. But I want you all to understand this. Today, tactically, was a victory, a tremendous one. We cost them far more than they cost us. If the Hawkbat identities remain uncompromised, we can continue with our plan. We have to remember that. Tyria said, What are we going to do about finding them? We'll put a team on the ground. First, we have to get as much information as possible about the movements of our enemies in the region where they went down. Wedge glanced at Kasten Don. You were going to get us information from your satellite account. Kasten nodded. I couldn't. The account had been shut down. When I accessed it, I got nothing but a pointer to a big file, full hollow, from Warlord Zinge. It's a letter to the Hawkbats. Kasten leaned forward to tap a command into the controls of the room's small hollow viewer. Above the table appeared Warlord Zinge, about a meter high.
I presume,
said the Warlord,
that I'm addressing the so-called General Kargan of the Hawkbats.
His expression became merry.
As you can see, the rules around Holmud have changed. The planet belongs to my alliance now, and you will not be permitted to stay here and continue causing trouble. To be honest, I'm impressed. Certainly, you've lost, but my victory was far more costly than it should have been. Testimony to your own skill and ferocity. I'd like to meet you. Attached to this hollow is a data stream that includes a hyperspace navigational course. Send a representative who can speak for you along that course, and you will meet a navigational beacon that will direct you further. I will make it worth your while to come to terms with me. Zinge out.
Wedge leaned back. Wraith, he said, it may have cost us dearly, but the Hawkbat operation has just begun to pay off. Kasten Don was the last in line to leave, but he shut the door before him and turned back to face Wedge. Sir, I'd like to be part of this operation. I have an idea. Wedge gestured for him to sit. Let's hear it. What if I put together a program that induced Iron Fist's computer to broadcast an occasional signal saying, Here I am, come and get me. This program would piggyback its message to outgoing signals, so there would be no extraneous broadcast for the ship's crew to detect. We could build up a database of the ship's movements. Wedge considered for a long moment. Kasten, I want you to work up this program.
Thank you, sir.
Kasten saluted and started to rise. Wait, now. I'm not going to authorize your mission, not this time.
What?
Kasten sank back into place, looking as angry as though he'd been slapped. Zinge is no fool. We're already flying in a crew of pirates he doesn't know. They're going to be under constant scrutiny. Later, when meetings become more routine and security gets lax, that's when we try your plan.
Caston flushed red and looked as though he wanted to argue the point, but stood, saluted with a military precision that was for him obviously an exercise in sarcasm, and retreated.